Hello and welcome to the Thursday, January 14th edition of Juno Afternoon on your very own KTOO. We've got a great show as usual. We'll have all the regulars, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more, and we'll chat about CBJ's accessory apartment grants. We'll be having some fun with Andy Klein about Beer Week, and then we're also going to get a preview of Perseverance Theater's brand new play, Our Voices Will Be Heard. It's a preview, and get a preview of that new play, and then Nancy Cherney will be here for Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The National Congress of American Indians president delivered the State of Indian Nations address this morning. Brian Clatesby focused on self-governance, saying there have been some positive steps, pointing to some tribes that have taken over and are now running their own schools, job training programs, and an elder's home.
But if we want to make self-determination the prevailing federal policy in the 21st century, we have much more work to do. We need to modernize the trust relationship. We need to replace antiquated laws and regulations and policies that trust and empower tribes to govern. We need a relationship based not on paternalism and control, but on deference and support. A partnership where tribes continue to meet their own challenges and chart their own path forward.
Clatesby gave examples of improvements to laws which have taken place during the Obama administration. Some bipartisan fixes, he said, were made to tribal health care, child welfare, and law and order. He went on to invite candidates during the election season to visit Indian country. Clatesby touched on a number of other issues impacting tribes today, including climate change. He delivered the speech from Washington, D.C. before tribal leaders, federal officials, and some members of Congress. This afternoon, a South Dakota tribal leader is delivering the State of Tribes address to state lawmakers. Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier will deliver the speech. It will be the first time that the South Dakota legislature will gather in joint session to hear an address from a tribal leader. Legislators say it's an important step towards building the relationship between tribes and the state. Healthcare, education, suicide prevention, and child welfare are among issues South Dakota tribes are working on. Governor Dennis Dugard gave his address this week, which included tribal priorities such as improving healthcare through Medicaid expansion. Meanwhile, the South Dakota High School Activities Association is considering a resolution calling on a voluntary end to the use of Native American mascots or symbols by school athletic teams. Board members and school officials discussed the matter on Wednesday. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The first reading of the resolution was presented by Dr. Roger Bordeaux. He serves as the Native American representative on the Association Board of Directors, and he's superintendent of the Teoshpa Zena Tribal School in northeast South Dakota. He says the resolution protects Native students and athletes from emotional harm.
The resolution is only asking that the association ask its membership to consider not using it. So it's not demanding, it's not requiring, it's not anything else. It's just asking them to reconsider the use of Indian mascots and Indian imagery.
Some schools in the state have been through the discussion several times, including schools which have large tribal enrollments. Sisseton Board of Education member Ron Evenson, whose district is within the boundaries of the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate in northeast South Dakota, says a recent controversy shows support for the school's team nickname of Redmen.
At that time, we had been slowly phasing out the use of the word Redmen, and we were no longer even using it on our uniforms. Our football team was putting together a fundraiser and found out that they weren't supposed to use the Redmen name anymore. Well, that angered some of our Native American coaches. They went out and got a petition signed by dozens of Oyate members asking us not only to keep the name, but to use the name.
State Activities Association board members say they want to keep the mascot issue a local matter rather than have a mandate at the state level. The board will review the resolution again before it becomes part of the association bylaws. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the National Indian Health Board. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace ends January 31st. Many Indian health clinics are hosting enrollment events with help available. You may qualify for low-cost plans, zero copays, and deductibles. More info at healthcare.gov/tribal.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I am Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. If the show sounds good, it's all Jeff. I'm just the talking head. As far as weather today, we've got rain and rain and rain. Possibly snow Friday night. Looks like some snow on Sunday. But I heard on the top of Eagle Crest, they received 11 inches of snow. So at the airport, it's 37. Downtown, it's 38. In the Mendenhall Valley, it's 35. 90% chance of precipitation. But here in the studio, we're nice and dry. We're going to kick off the show with our first guest, who is Greg Cheney. He is the lands manager for the City and Borough of Juneau, also known as CBJ. And he's here to talk about the accessory apartment grants. And this is a brand new program. Welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here with Jeff and Joan.
Here we are.
So, the accessory apartment grant program is an incentive program intended to get people who are on the fence about possibly building an accessory apartment to kind of tip them over to the side of, let's do this.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. What sure. is an accessory apartment?
Yeah, that's if you have a normal house on an average lot, this would be an apartment of about 600 square feet. So it's basically a one-bedroom apartment.
Oh, so you mean like in your basement?
Well, it could be in your basement, could be on the side of your house, or it could be all by itself sitting in your yard as a separate building.
Or part of your garage.
It could be upstairs. A lot of people have garages on the first floor and an accessory apartment upstairs.
So the minimum square footage is 600 square feet?
No, that's the maximum.
Oh, interesting.
It's kind of interesting. It's intended to be an infill program where people will build in existing neighborhoods primarily. And so it's accessory to the main unit. And so as a result, they have a maximum size. Now, in certain circumstances, you can have slightly larger. I believe 800 square feet is the absolute maximum, but it's all very lot dependent. Depends on your property. So check with the Community Development Department for the rules that apply to you. But in general, the community, and especially the assembly, would like to get people to build more dwelling units in Juneau. And accessory apartments are an easy way to do this, and they're great for homeowners because as a homeowner, you can build an accessory apartment. If you want to use it for a rental, you can and get extra income. If you want to use it for guests, and then a lot of people use it for long-term relative stays, and that's where the term mother-in-law apartment comes from. A lot of times people have their relatives live there, but I think it's going to be just as common to have our kids live there as well.
Hopefully not.
But, you know, they come home from college for summer jobs or something like that. It's an awesome kind of intermediate step.
Exactly, so. And I don't mean that we should have our feet on the backs of our children, but there's all these stories about 20, 30, 40-somethings living at home. But let's get back to the grant part of it. So that's what it is. That's what an accessory apartment is.
Right.
And what are the grants? What is this incentive program?
So the grant is very exciting. What we've managed to do is set up 12 $6,000 grants. So right now, if we have up to 12 people could get a $6,000 incentive grant. Now, the grant comes at the end of the project. So the way it works is you go in, get a building permit. When you get your building permit issued, you fill out a form that says, I also want to be eligible for this grant program. Actually, you do that when you submit your building permit. I'm sorry. But when they issue your building permit, that's when your project becomes locked in for the grant. You have 1 year from the date of the grant of the building permit, from the date the building permit is issued, to get the grant. And how you do that is get a certificate of occupancy. So let's say the classic is maybe you're doing it in your basement. You have a large basement. It's you have to do some remodeling to make it work. You have a year to do that, and if you get that done, that project done within 1 year, the city of Juneau will issue you a $6,000 check.
And do you have to give in your receipts, or you just have to show the certification?
You just have to get
the CO, is that what it's called?
Yeah, they're very good. Yeah, certificate of occupancy, and that's all we need. We don't, and so for some people, it might be rather easy because if you have kind of a large basement, or it doesn't have to be in the basement, it could be a top floor, wherever. If you have a large room existing in your house that could be converted into an apartment, great. That's another dwelling unit. That's all we care about. So it might cost you a little bit. If you're talking about building a separate building in your, you maybe have a little bit large yard and you just want to put a 600 square foot, like a little cottage in your backyard, that's fine too. It might cost you a little more. We'll still give you the same grant.
Okay. So let's talk about, you said converting the space into, mm-hmm. what is the criteria for this grant that it would separate entrance?
It has to meet the building code. And so that's something where I would direct people to talk to our people in the community development department, because there's zoning issues, there's building code issues, there are engineering issues, and you have to get it all worked out before you get your building permit. But in general, it would be a separate dwelling unit, needs a separate entrance. It has to have sound and fire separation from the rest of the unit. So that's a big one. You sometimes have to rebuild walls in order to make it work. And you have to have a separate bathroom, separate kitchen. So basically someone can live there independently.
Okay.
It doesn't have to have a bedroom, but a lot of times that's a nice feature.
So it could be a studio.
Yeah.
This sounds like a great program. Tell me why the city is doing this.
Well, the city of Juneau has been doing a lot of research on housing problem and high housing costs here. We have one of the highest housing costs in the state of Alaska, and Alaska has one of the highest housing costs in the nation, maybe not as much as San Francisco, but still, we're on the high end. So a lot of people in Juneau are spending more than 30% of their income on rent, and that's a real drag on the economy because people will leave town. They just can't afford to live here. So one of the major both cultural and economic drags on our life of health as a community is the fact that we don't have affordable rentals or affordable housing. And so accessory apartments are a nice little niche. It's a great for in singles or a couple that's pretty cozy, can live in one of these apartments. Usually the rents are going to be lower, although we do not regulate the rents to get the grant. It's just that they're small apartments. And then we figure the more of these that we get out on the market, the better it's going to be for everybody.
And so there isn't even a requirement to rent this space.
That's correct. We don't require it to be rented, but our guess is that if these rental units exist, people will either rent them or they'll use them for their relatives. And so even though money's not changing hand, or live-in caregivers, and that's a really great one. If you're getting up there in years and you think, yeah, maybe in 10 years I might need a little help around the house, I don't want to move into assisted living, you could have somebody live in your accessory apartment and provide a little assistance for you and maybe trade rent, and we get another dwelling unit out of it. So that's the main goal, is just to get more dwelling units and more options for people.
Okay. So if people are listening and they're saying, wow, this sounds really interesting,
mm-hmm.
so they go to the CBJ site, where would they look
for
this?
Yeah, on the city website, there's information either on the lands page or the community development page. It just sends you to the same thing. There's a little information brochure and a very brief grant application. Our application's very simple.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Greg Cheney. He is the land resource manager, the lands manager for CBJ, the City and Borough of Juneau. There's a new accessory apartment grant, $6,000,
mm-hmm.
not up to $6,000,
yes,
to
unit.
Make mm-hmm. a 600 square foot individual living space somewhere in your house or on your land.
Right.
And you could check it all out at CBJ under
Lands or Community Development. And if you're, yes, specific questions, I would call the Community Development Department. That's also, I don't have the number with me, I just realized, but it's on the website.
Okay.
And I also wanted to point out one grant per person and one grant per lot. So one person can't suck up all 12.
No subdividing.
Yeah, and then also, if you want to build a new house and design the accessory apartment into your new house, that's also eligible for the grant. So, you know, you can come at it a lot of different ways.
Okay. And then one last question, which
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with the accessory apartment grants.
Okay.
So, as lands manager, what do you do?
Oh, wow. You didn't tell me anything. Okay.
It's not a trick question.
It feels. No, lands is a very broad category of responsibilities. We run the air quality program in the Valley, and that's live right now. But we also manage all city property. We lease property. We subdivide property. We are overseeing management of the parks and rec property. We are involved with any city property, including fire, police, the hospital, you know, airport. Now, all of these organizations have their own management program, but we get involved when some land issue comes along. So it's a very broad field.
It's a very large umbrella.
Very large umbrella.
It's a very large umbrella. And on that, we're going to end. Thank you so much, Greg, for coming in.
Thank you for having me, and thank you, Jeff.
It's 15 minutes past the hour. We're going to go and take a short break, and we'll be right back with Beer Week. Welcome back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We've got Andy Klein and Kelsey Johnson from the Alaskan Brewing Company here to talk about Beer Week.
Hey, Kay, Beer Week. Hey, Joan.
Hey,
how you
Andy.
Doing?
Hey, Kelsey.
Hey, Joan.
So what is going on? What is Beer Week?
It's this really cool thing that's happening across the state. There's a big there's a thing that's been going for, I don't even know how long the Barley Wine Fest has been going, but it's been going for a number of years, and that happens next weekend up in Anchorage. And around that, it started growing this idea of celebrating beer throughout that whole week and then culminating in the Barley Wine Festival.
Right. There's so many great craft brews, even in Alaska, in the last 10 years. It's just become a bigger thing, and we wanted to sort of bring that down to Juneau. It's been bigger up in Anchorage.
Yeah, it's been kind of an Anchorage thing, and it's like, what? So we brought AK Beer Week down here, and Kelsey is the person that runs all of our retail stuff, the gift shop and all that stuff, so it sort of falls on her and her staff to host things when we want to do stuff, so she's gotten involved with a bunch of fun different events that we're doing starting tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Wow, cool. Let's hear the lineup.
All right. Tomorrow night, we're actually just doing a nice toast to kick off the week, inviting anybody who wants to show up and just have a nice cheers with us and say, hey, we love craft beer.
And where is that going to be?
That's going to be at the tasting room at 5 p.m.
It's out at the brewery.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah, at the Lemon Creek location. So come, grab a sample, toast with us. We're going to see, and if you come, I don't want to forget, if you mention AK Beer Week starting tomorrow, we will give you 10% off any purchase of apparel. So unfortunately, it doesn't include the beer, but you need a new hoodie, we'll give you 10% off.
Or those really cool coffee.
The coffee brown
hoodies.
Oh my
gosh, exactly. Their new product. Let's talk about your new product for a second and how great the swag is.
So that's not even the new product. You know, the new product is now Hop Turn. Hop Turn IPA is our new spring seasonal. She's looking at herself because she was wearing a really cool Hop Turn sweatshirt yesterday.
I'll tell you, don't blink. Brewing Company, man. The new hot thing is not... it kicked off the hot list. It's hot, but it's not the newest.
But it's a really cool beer. It's an IPA, but a kind of an easier drinking, kind of mellower tasting IPA with a really refined hop characteristic. So people are loving it. And
really
then the
great
gear
them,
is really cool because it's a mountain. It's a skier on a mountain. It's all really cool.
That's just amazing how much product you have. And how you keep on... pushing the envelope. That's great. So 10% off. So we have like samples and 10% off swag.
That's right.
Exactly. And that 10% applies all week if you mention AK Beer Week.
Okay. And
then
what
the
happens?
The second event that's going to happen is next Friday. We're going to have, then there's Skiers Friday,
which is
of course Monday. Skiers Friday is Monday.
I want to understand that. Nancy Ducharney once asked me.
Because the mountain is closed on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Right.
So they have Friday.
All right.
So we're having that Monday. What's going on there?
So Skiers Friday all day. If you come in and present a 2015-16 Eagle Crest Pass, then you get a free T-shirt. And it actually features the new Hop Turn logo. So we're trying to...
You should see Joan's face right now.
I wish the radio
audience could see Joan's face.
So are you talking about a season pass? Are you talking about a day pass?
So actually any pass for 2015-16.
Wow.
So we're being very, very...
We just want people to come in
and celebrate with us.
So that's at the depot?
No. So that is also at the tasting room in Lemon Creek.
In Lemon Creek. Okay, so far we have two events at...
Lemon Creek.
Yeah, actually, all of our AK Beer Week events are out at the brewery.
Okay.
In the Lemon Creek location.
Make it easy.
Makes it easy. Okay. So, all right. So that is happening...
Monday.
Starting
at 11 a.m. when they open and going to 6 p.m. when the tap room closes. And it's happening all day long. And bring your ski pass with you and get a free T-shirt. That's such an awesome deal.
That is super awesome.
Cool.
And I think it's like a holiday that day, too.
It is.
It's a Federal Estate Holiday.
It's a fun day, kind of. Celebratory.
Right. But I know
you
have
a really, really cool thing we're doing is we're doing this first tap of our old growth barley wine. So our next new limited edition beer that we do called the Rough Draft Limited Edition Series is our old recipe of the barley wine that we've done for decades out at the brewery. And it's something that Jeff Larson, our co-founder, is especially really invested in and spends a lot of time with figuring out how we're going to do it. This year we did it with spruce tips in it and also birch syrup, and we aged it on oak chips. So it's got a really complex flavor. It's a barley wine, so it's a pretty big beer when it comes to alcohol content. And so we're doing that, and we're also doing a full tasting that day where we're going to do a flight of beers, some of which are unavailable for sale.
Most of them are unavailable for sale. In fact, I think all of them. And starting with our old growth, we're also featuring a vintage barley wine that was brewed in 2012, something you definitely can't get anywhere else. And then also our Perseverance Ale, which was our anniversary ale we did for our 25th anniversary, and it's a Russian Imperial Stout, beautifully made, also featuring smoked malt,
birch syrup, and also fiery honey.
And when is this?
This is Friday.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Friday the 22nd.
The next Friday.
So a week from tomorrow.
Right.
And that is 5 to 7. And it is such an amazing exclusive event that we are going to ask for $5 to attend and, you know, try some awesome beer.
Anyone who went to the vertical tasting we did of all the smoked porters a month or so ago, it's going to be a similar thing. We're going to have a brewer. I'll probably be there. We're going to be talking people through as they're tasting. We might have some of the ingredients that are used in the beers, like spruce tips or like some smoked malt or things like that to accompany tasting the beer. So it'll be a really interesting kind of taste sensation, right? And we'll do a couple of different tastings. We'll do one at 5 and one at 6. And run people through what they're tasting and have a fun special never again to be repeated amazing tasting of like these beers that just are unavailable. Yeah.
Oh, man, that sounds great.
And then the final thing we have is on Saturday, with the January 23rd, which is the last day of AK Beer Week, we're having the first tap of our brand new Rough Draft Limited series. It's called Smash Mosaic. So Smash means single malt and single hop. That's what SMASH stands for.
A little clever industry term.
Yeah. So it means we brew beer using just one type of malt, and we only use one type of hop. Usually it's a blend of malts and hops that kind of give you a complex flavor. And we're using just a Pilsner malt with the SMASH, with the Mosaic hop. And Mosaic hop is a really complex hop that can bitter the beer when it's being boiled and also offer a lot of aromatics and high-end tastes when it's added as a dry hop after the boil. So it's kind of a complex hop that can do a variety of things in a beer. It's a really cool beer. I've tasted it on Taste Panel. It's awesome.
Awesome.
It sounds like you're going to have like dozens of beers in this beer week. It just sounds
kind of exclusive ones.
You know, it's AKA Craft Beer Week, so that's what we're trying to do is just look at all the cool things that we do get to do behind the scenes that not everybody always gets to try and really get that out there.
Yeah, and 2016 is a big year for us. Oh, we're going to have a great year this year, and so we want to kind of share the fun that we're going to have this whole year at Alaskan Brewing with everyone who's been so awesome for 29 years and counting here in Juneau. You know, this community has supported Alaskan Brewing, and we love the opportunity and the excuse to give back a little bit by just having these fun events.
That sounds great. Okay, let's just do the rundown one more time. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Andy Klein and Kelly Johnson from the Alaskan Brewing Company. It's Beer Week. It kicks off tomorrow, and there are several great events. So tomorrow, and all of this takes place at Lemon Creek.
Right.
So tomorrow we're just having a toast. It's at 5 o'clock. We're
going to
welcome everyone there. We've got our greater lineup of 9 different beers that people can fill up a sample glass with and have a toast with us. And if you do mention AK Beer Week, all week long, starting tomorrow, you'll get 10% off any apparel purchase. So we can't do it for beer, but for any of the gift shop items that are out there, any apparel that's out there, you'll get 10% off. Sounds like a fun deal.
Absolutely.
And then Skiers Friday.
Skiers Friday, which is actually Monday, January 18th, we're going to do the, if you bring your 2015-16 pass, we're going to give you a free t-shirt that features the Hop Turn logo, and that should be happening all day, 11 to 6, and then we're ending the whole, it's not the end of the week, but on Friday the 22nd, we're going to do the first tap of the Old Growth Barley Wine, featuring beers you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, so Old Growth Barley Wine, 2012 Barley Wine, Perseverance Ale, and which one else?
Keg of the Winter.
Oh, the very last winter keg
we have. Yeah.
Oh.
That's gonna be great.
That's sort of sad in a way, last keg of winter. And then the last thing we're going to be doing is the first tapping of our Smash Mosaic. It's our brand new Rough Draft Limited beer. That's going to be on Saturday, January 23rd from 11 to 6. It's happening all day, but be the first one to try the brand new Rough Draft Smash Mosaic, which is an awesome beer. We've gotten to taste it already.
Really awesome.
It's really good.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for what you guys do for our community. And
we make beer.
I know.
I mean, right?
It's kind of important.
It's kind of amazing.
It's kind of important. It's here. And also just the whole, you know, when you talk about craft beer, it's a craft. You know, it's always fun to talk to you guys because you're so passionate about the alchemy of beer and how it's happening. And I think it's great. And I love the beer and I love the swag.
Thanks, John.
So with that, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with the people from Perseverance. It's the preview. Our Voices Will Be Heard opens this weekend. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 14th of January, 2016. It's the birthday of Emily Hahn, born St. Louis, 1905, writer for the New Yorker magazine for many years. She got an engineering degree from the University of Wisconsin, one of the first women to do that, after which she and a friend dressed up as men and drove across the country in a Model T Ford, writing letters home, which came to be published later in the New Yorker. Moved to Shanghai when she was 30 to be China correspondent for the magazine. Had an affair with a poet, took up smoking opium. She said, I always wanted to be an opium addict, and she succeeded. 1941, she gave birth to a daughter, having had an affair with the head of British Army Intelligence in Hong Kong. Family settled in England, but Emily Hahn came back to live in New York City and write for the magazine. More than 200 articles for The New Yorker. She wrote 54 books in all. She wrote about her travels. She wrote a few biographies, a few novels, wrote about diamonds and the Philippines. Her granddaughter gave the eulogy at Emily Hahn's funeral in 1997. Granddaughter said, chances are your grandmother didn't smoke cigars and let you hold role-playing parties in her apartment. Chances are that she didn't teach you Swahili obscenities. Chances are that when she took you to the zoo, she did not start whooping passionately at the top of her lungs as you went by the gibbon cage. Sadly for you, your grandmother was not Emily Hahn. It's the birthday of the novelist John Dos Passos, Chicago, 1896, one of the emigre writers in Paris, along with Hemingway and Fitzgerald, made his reputation with his novel Manhattan Transfer, followed by The 42nd Parallel, 1919, and The Big Money. And it was on this date in 1943, Franklin Roosevelt made the first airplane journey by an American president. He needed to get over to North Africa, Casablanca, to meet with Winston Churchill. Left Florida in a Boeing 314 flying boat. Flew to Trinidad, then to Brazil, across the Atlantic to Gambia, and then on to Morocco. The journey took 4 days. Here's a poem for today by Michael Ryan, When I Was Conceived. It was 1945, and it was May. White crocus bloomed in St. Louis. The Germans gave in, but the war shoved on, and my father came home from work that evening, tired, and washed his hands, not picturing the black, goggled men with code names fashioning an atomic bomb. Maybe he loved his wife that evening, maybe after eating, she smoothed his jawline with her palm as he stretched out on the couch with his head in her lap, while Bob Hope spoofed Hirohito on the radio, and they both laughed. My father sold used cars at the time and didn't like it, so if he complained, maybe she held him an extra moment in her arms, the heat in the air pressing between them. So they turned upstairs early that evening, arm in arm, without saying anything. When I Was Conceived, a poem by Michael Ryan, from his new and selected poems, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Staples, offering printer ink and toner cartridges for home and business with in-store print shops offering customized presentations, booklets, and manuals. In-store and online, Staples make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Join KTOO Public Media for the annual KTOO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on Saturday, February 6th. Due to the rapid growth of this annual event, we've expanded the number of restaurants preparing dishes, moved the event to Centennial Hall to comfortably accommodate everyone, and added a silent auction. This year's Seafood Festival will also feature live music from the Rob Cohen Jazz Trio and the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band. Tickets are on sale now at KTOO.org.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon on your very own public radio station, KTOO, or at least one of them. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm your Thursday host, and I'm very excited to be in the studio with our next guest. We have Art Roach, who is the artistic director of Perseverance Theater, our very own fantastic local theater company. And then we have Vera Starborn, who is the
author, the playwright of Our Voices Will Be Heard, which is a play that will be opening tomorrow night. There is a performance, Pay As You Can, tonight, and it is the world premiere of Vera Storburn's very first play. So welcome to the studio, Art and Vera.
Thank you.
How you doing, Vera?
Still a little nervous.
I bet. So let's talk a little bit about the arc of this play. How did you become a playwright?
Well, I wrote a short story when I was 18 years old called The Eyes of Love, and it was about my experience of abuse at the hands of my uncle when I was little and sort of my journey through that. And a decade later, I had not done anything with that short story and saw an advertisement for the Alaska Native Playwright Project at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. And I submitted that story, it was accepted, and through the process of a 10-day intensive and a year-long mentorship, turn that short story into Our Voices Will Be Heard.
Wow. That's an amazing journey. And how did it wind up at Perseverance for its first production?
Well, the Alaska Native Playwrights Project was a really great program and had a lot of colleagues involved in it and kind of was trying to stay connected to it. I think the years were, when was it, Vera? It was about 5 years ago that it started, 4 years
it
ago?
It was 2011. Yeah. The Playwright Project, and then 2012 when it had its first
reading. Yeah, so there have been two or three cohorts, and Perseverance is a new plays theater, and one of the reasons is to find plays about Alaska and produce them and make them, because if we don't do it, you know, there's if we don't make them in Alaska, they won't be made in, you know, another state, because there's no place like it, right? And this is one of the plays that people suggested, and eventually got to take a look at it, and I think my first question is, how do you feel about making this play in Juneau? It's a Tlingit play, and this is Tlingit country, and that was going to bring with it a lot of challenges, right? But Vera's very courageous, and we have a great team, so I'm really happy we've gotten to this day.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. So, Vera, you were born in Craig?
Yes.
And then you're living up in Anchorage now?
Yeah.
And you've also spent some time in Juneau.
Yeah, I grew up sort of all over Alaska because my dad was a state trooper, and I spent some elementary years here, and then I graduated from Tsongkhtahini. So I have a lot of history here and a lot of families still living here.
And how has it been for you? You're working on a play that's about this area, and you're back in this area, and you're working with a team of 8 actors and an artistic team to kind of mount the play, which is, I guess, a family of its own, right? You've been in artistic trenches, let's say. Yeah. How has the process been for you?
I will say, well, we've had readings in L.A. and San Diego and New York City and Anchorage. Juneau was the scariest because I didn't know how it was going to be received here. But the reading that we did and some of the previews was completely gratifying in that the people who saw it and even the local actors who were able to be in both the reading and the performance felt it was their story. They really took an ownership of it, and that was pretty neat. So it kind of allayed my fears of what too much of the reaction was going to be.
Sounds wonderful. We were talking at break that, you know, it's, for me, I have such an awe of artists, and a playwright is definitely an artist, is being so brave. And then to tell a local story in a local place where it actually happened in the place, it takes a lot of bravery. So I am really appreciative of you sharing your art and your story. I think it's really great. What do you like about the writing process?
I love playing with words. I love making beautiful phrases. I love connecting with imagination and bringing metaphor to life. And I've learned, because I've written a book, I've, you know, been a journalist for 15 years now, that I actually really love the collaboration process, which is brand new to me. And I was really scared about it and didn't know that I would like it. But the collaboration is the most fascinating part of the writing process right now to me, that my words have an impact not only on the actors, but on the lighting and the costumes and the props. My goodness, the poor prop master had to make so many props because I hadn't considered just how many props I'd actually written into the words. So it's been pretty neat.
That sounds great. Let's talk about your book and your years as a journalist, or maybe you're still working as a journalist. What's the book that you wrote?
The book is called Devilfish Sleeps, and I have not been brave enough to send that out to be published. I completed it several years ago, and it's sort of the next tackling, either to publish it or turn it into a play next.
Oh. But
I'm editor of First to Lessons magazine and have many more years as a journalist than I actually do as creative writing, even though creative writing is kind of my passion.
And it sounds like now that it seems like your medium might be the theater, is what you're thinking.
Interestingly, it's become something I got hooked on, and my husband and I started Dark Winter Productions up in Anchorage, which is an Alaska Native theater group where we actually all came from, the Alaska Native Playwright Project, and just wanted that to continue. Even though that grant had ended, we wanted to continue making Alaska Native theater.
That sounds exciting. It sounds really fascinating and really exciting. Congratulations. So, Art, how has the process been for you? How many new shows, how many world premieres have you been intimately involved with?
It's just a lot. I mean, the theater's kind of known as a new plays theater, and it goes with our mission, like we were saying, right? If we're going to make theater about Alaska, we're going to have to write some plays, probably a lot of plays, because there's so many different facets, and there's such a rich history here. So I think over the years since Molly Smith started the theater, there have been about 70 world premieres. That's the average of almost two per season. And we're really honored this year to have become a core member of the National New Play Network, which is a group of theaters like ours that believe that theater is a living form and we need to keep writing plays and adding them to the library. And we support each other through this network. So that's a new tool we have. But a lot. And I personally, I couldn't even count, Joan. I'm not sure.
It doesn't matter. 70 is a jaw-dropping number.
Yeah,
so
yeah. That's 70. Perseverance's record. I don't know my own number.
Right.
Yeah.
So how has this process been?
It's been great. This play had some great development invested in it before we even got a chance to read it. So the Native Playwrights Project is a terrific, just a really well-put-together project. And the Heritage Center brought a theater company called Native Voices in to work with them as their experts. And Native Voices then facilitated the various mentors, including Larissa Fasthorse, who's been working on this play she's directing it for us and has been working on it since the very beginning through the Playwrights Project. We're now collaborating with Native Voices on another project, which is terrific. That'll be in our next season. Native Voices then, what do they call the program? You had a 10-day or so residency in Los Angeles with it.
The Playwrights Workshop with Native Voices.
All Native American writers, Alaska Native writers that they're supporting there. So that's a great partner for us to have. And then Perseverance sponsored a reading of it here in Juneau, which was a chance to get some feedback in Tlingit country, which was really important and a good first step. And then Vera mentioned we brought it out to New York. Sometimes hearing an Alaskan work read that far away is really a great way to get a grip on what the play is. Like, for example, The Blue Bear, if you remember that new work that we did, wasn't quite sure how to pitch it or whether to try and encourage people outside of Alaska to do it or whether it was really an Alaskan story. We had a reading of it at the same place, the LARC Play Development Center in New York, who are also partners of ours. And the response was so great that we realized we had not just an Alaskan story, but just a good play. So,
how was that experience in New York for you?
That was a little surreal, and I'm still not sure it happened.
You're going to have a lot of processing to do after this.
Yeah.
So from the time that you realized that your short story was a play, okay, from the time, your short story was accepted into the program, how long has it been?
That's been 4 years.
And
so it'll actually be tomorrow, 4 years to the day that the first pages were written and given to the Playwrights Project. So,
well, that's poetic in itself.
It really is. We actually have a picture of me and Larissa and Jack, who are both now involved with the play, and Jack Dalton is playing the part of storytelling. We have a picture 4 years ago, tomorrow, that will mark that day pretty well.
So the culmination, 4 years to the date. Well, all I could say is congratulations on the culmination of 4 years of hard work. I'm really looking forward to seeing the play. And thank you for bringing your voice to the theater community here, and I have a feeling beyond. So I'm really looking forward to it. So thanks for sharing your story and your art.
Okay, Ashish.
Yes.
Thank you, John.
So we are going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. We think we know robins pretty well.
red-breasted birds of spring that tug earthworms from the ground. Perhaps less well-known is that, in winter, flocks of American robins spend the night together. Usually, a few dozen to a few hundred birds roost communally in trees or an old barn, or under a bridge. Larger robin roosts can number in the thousands, or even tens of thousands of birds. A remarkable number, until we consider the scene near St. Petersburg, Florida, during the winter of 2007. Observers here counted robins arriving in late afternoon to roost on an island of dense mangrove trees. For 2.5 hours, the stunned census takers watched a steady stream of robins flying overhead, based on the rate of birds passing by per second. A conservative estimate was 720,000 robins. If the average robin weighs 2.7 ounces, that was nearly 61 tons of robins. The previous year, the same roost hosted a mere 42,000 robins. In 2007, it was likely snow and ice to the north and west that pushed these legions of robins to Florida. And we thought we knew robins. You can share this show with a friend when you come to birdnote.org.
Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Here we are. It is 15 minutes to the hour. You're listening to KTLO, its very own program, Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He is at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your host for Thursday. And we always close the show on Thursday with Nancy DeCherney, who braves the elements to walk across the street from the Juno Arts and Humanities
so
Council.
Brutal.
It is today. And she is here to tell us what's going on in our Arts Up section.
Well, it's, you've just spoken with probably the big event for the
weekend. Big event, Perseverance Theater World Premiere.
And it's going on through February 7th, I think it is. I can't remember.
And then it goes to Hoonah, and then it goes to Anchorage.
So people always think, oh, I have plenty of time.
And buy your tickets.
And then they don't have plenty of time anymore. So remember that part of it. Let's see. I feel like there are a few things we want to talk about. Tomorrow. Is tomorrow the 15th of January? It is.
Tomorrow is the 15th of January.
At 10 a.m. is when the wearable art tickets go on sale to the general public. So we'll see you guys there.
And what's the theme this year?
Reflections.
Reflections.
Yeah, you can see it in the rain out there. There's some reflections right now.
And I'd like to see some reflections and some snow. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. Later this weekend, right? Let's see. We've got a few. There's open mic night tonight with Terry Tibbett and Abby Oki karaoke at McGivney's and things like that. I think the Traveler Duo has been canceled. I thought I got a message about that, but right now it's on my calendar for 6 p.m. at Rockwell, but don't count on it. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., the Juno Douglas Little Theater is having auditions for Five Lesbians Eating Quiche.
Which is a play.
Which is a play.
Mm-hmm. And that's tomorrow night.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And then coming up, they'll be performing that. So let's see. We also have the Orca Adaptive Ski and Volunteer Training up at Eagle Crest. That's on Saturday morning at 9:30. There's a Nordic ski race at various locations, it says. I hope there's some snow at 10:30. And I guess you would call maybe Eagle Crest to find out about that.
They have a pretty good website, too. You can
the
just,
Nordic?
Yeah, you can okay. just search
go
for
there.
That.
All right. On Sunday, there's Learn to Adapt Adaptive Ski Awareness up at the Eagle Crest Ski Area at 10 in the morning till 3. Woosh Kanade is doing a spoken word workshop at Kindred Post. It's from 1 to 4. They say there's a sliding scale for the admittance to that. I don't know whether they count your word count in order to decide what your scale is. But
I don't know.
You'll find out when you get there. It'll be great. Let's see. There is karaoke out at Suite 907 at 9 p.m. On Monday is Martin Luther King Day. A variety of places will probably be closed, but there is free legal help available at Jordan Creek Center and the downtown courthouse. And as well, there will be the community celebration at St. Paul's Catholic Church. Beautiful music, wonderful things happening. The celebration is at 1 to 2 p.m. at the St. Paul's Catholic Church. And legal help from 9 to noon downtown, or at the Jordan Creek Center, and 1 to 4 at the downtown courthouse. There's a Friends of the Slam meeting happening at 3 p.m. at the Arts Council. And it's Skiers Friday over at the Hangar on the Wharf.
I found out why it is Skiers Friday.
Did you figure it out?
I did. I didn't figure it out. Andy told me.
Oh, okay.
So the mountain is closed on Monday, but it's opened on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. So you have
Skiers Friday is Monday because there you go.
There you go. Roller Girls will be practicing at the Jack 6:30 on Monday. They do that on Mondays. And if you're interested in becoming a Roller Girl or learning more about that, probably stop in there and chat with them a little bit. There's an arts roundtable on Tuesday from 5 to 6:30, and there's been an interest in having the brown trash cans in the city wrapped with artwork, sort of a vinyl wrapping stuff. Hmm. And they're going to talk about that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, so if you're interested in that as a thing, find out more about it. I think we were trying to find out if it's possible and then how we would go about it and all that sort of stuff. There's West Coast Swing Dancing at Suite 907 from 7 to 9 on Tuesday. It's free. Of course, you have to be 21 to go there. There's a journal memoir and writing thing, Write for Your Life, on Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 11 out at the Mendenhall Public Library. And they do this every week. So if you're interested in writing, it might be a thing to try. There is a Sieglet Eat-Up Meetup from 5:30 to 8 at the Canton Bistro on Wednesday, and the weekly Old Time Music Jam at 7 p.m. at the Alaskan Hotel. And that takes us to next week.
Okay. So let's talk about what's going on at the Arts Council. So the big news is that the Wearable Arts Show tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the next big show that you're bringing?
We have the really Capital Steps. The really big show. Capital Steps is going to be here on Sunday, the 24th. And
just in time for session.
Exactly. And in fact, there's some folks coming from out of town, and they heard that this is happening, and they're all excited. So, again, this is one of those ones where if you think you want to come, I would be getting your tickets, because those tickets may go once those folks hit town. We have that happening. Once we get rolling on this, it's getting pretty busy in the community. Also that week is the Governor's Awards for the Arts, and that is there'll be a reception here on Thursday, I think it's at 5:30, and then the awards and whatnot will be happening over at the Jack. It's opening at 6:30 and the stuff is at 7. So get tickets for that. We have four people from Juno getting awards, or three people. And I'm one of them. I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I must be living under a rock. Tell me who's being awarded and what you're being awarded for. Congratulations,
well,
Nancy.
Well, thank you.
Well deserved.
Well, thank you. I'm completely surprised by the whole situation. But Vicky Soboloff, who does Children of All Nations Dance Group, is being receiving the Margaret A. Cook Award. And Steve Henriksen is receiving award for his contributions to the humanities. And there's me. It seems like I can't remember who the other person is. See how it is? But anyway, that's happening the last week of January. And then we roll right into all the wearable art craziness. I am still looking for volunteers, so if you'd like to get involved, I could be using some help. Give us a call or go on to our website. There's a place to sign up on a Google Doc. And then we're rolling right into gospel. It's gospel season. They start February 15th. And if you want to join the choir, sign up for that too. And this year we have all kinds of new exciting things happening for Motown. I can't reveal them all right now. But as soon as we know all the details, I'll let you know.
Okay, let's roll that back because I've seen the concert. But let's pretend everyone who's listening doesn't know what we're talking about. So how does it all work?
Okay, so we bring Reverend Bobby Lewis and Eustace Johnson from Harlem. They come here and they do a gospel workshop, and then we have and usually there's about 100 people in the community in the choir. It's getting so the audience is smaller than the choir.
It's powerful.
It is powerful.
It is powerful.
And we'll have celebrations. It'll be out at Thunder Mountain High School this year, the performances. The workshops will be still at the Jack. But they run the workshops, and then everybody sings and has a wonderful time. In the meantime, on Friday, they happened to be really enthusiastic about Juno and wanted to help us raise money for the Willoughby Arts Complex. And so they offered to do a Motown concert. Bobby and Eustace used to be cruise ship entertainers, and so they do a fabulous routine Motown thing. They have some of the singers from the celebration are in the backup band. They fly down Dr. Jonelle Soler, who is the voice teacher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Amazing voice, amazing singer, performer. And so there's a huge Motown thing that happens.
What is that date?
That is the 19th. It's the Friday in between the...
Great.
Yeah. So get ready for some raising the roof type stuff. It's just exciting that happens. Yeah, yeah, and I hope people will, if you're thinking about singing, get signed up for that too. Like I said, that's often got way more people than we need. And of course, there's coming up also mixed into this whole thing is the symphony has got a performance at the end of the month in January too. So rest up this week because, or go to the Perseverance Theater.
But drop by the Alaskan Brewery.
Yes.
And get your swag and taste exotic beers, exotic homegrown beers.
Jeff is reminding me that there's the legislative reception, which is coming up on the Wednesday of the, which will be the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, something like that. It's the 27th. I think it's the day before. There's too many things going on. See how my day is? And this isn't in this week, so we can mention it again.
Yeah, so it's probably not this.
But it is time. You should all be ready for that. Our friends are coming back.
Yes. So. Our lawmakers are coming back, and we should welcome them and wish them luck as they navigate what needs to be done to make our state vibrant and sustainable and wonderful, as it always is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy, for coming. We are going to wrap up the show. It is 4 minutes to the hour, and it is still raining. We're going to have rain for quite a while. We're looking at maybe snow on Friday night, mostly cloudy, windy, and then for the rest of the week, hopefully some snow on Sunday night. Right now, it is 33 at the airport, 33 downtown, 32 in the Mendenhall Valley. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO in Alaska's capital city. Thanks for joining us. All Things Considered is next.